And in the closing chapter of the book, I put a kind of tongue-in-cheek invitation, and I said I founded a secret society, which is a very romantic device. And I said, if you want to be part of the business romantic society, this very secret society, and please shoot me an email. And it was meant as a joke, but then some people actually emailed me and inquired about it and said, hey, how can I become a member of the business romantic society? And so at some point I felt like, oh, I need to do something. I need to gather people.
Welcome to season 4 of Go Out and Talk to Strangers. This is Adi. I'm a nomadic architect and the founder of The New Movement, an architectural design studio that designs one-of-a-kind, innovative, and creative projects worldwide, using the built environment as a tool to help people thrive. During my travels, I am constantly meeting incredible people. People who are reshaping the way we live, work, and connect. The reason I started this show is because I want to highlight the ones who are leading the way. This is the place where I host thought leaders, entrepreneurs, and founders of unique projects to share their stories and insights. I want to invite you to be part of the change. If you are looking for something bigger than yourself, if you also feel that we can do better, and standard is simply not good enough, you're in the right place. I hope you'll enjoy today's episode. My guest today, Tim Lebrecht, is a true visionary. He is the co-founder and co-CEO of the House of Beautiful Business, a global network committed to redefining business in favor of a life-centered economy. Tim's words and insights had reached global audiences, from TED Talks viewed by millions to keynote speeches at global events, hosted by tech giants like LinkedIn, Adobe, Google, and more. Tim is the author of The Business Romantic and The End of Winning, books who have ignited conversations about the future of work and business. You can find his writing in the pages of prestigious publications like Forbes and Harvard Business Review, challenging norms and inspiring us to reimagine our professional lives. Today, we'll explore how beauty, humanity, and purpose are reshaping the business landscape. Let's begin. So, Tim, welcome to the show.
Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. So you have quite an interesting story when it comes to the community that you built around the House of Beautiful Business. How did it all start?
Yeah, it started in 2017 when we hosted the first event in Barcelona, and it was inspired by the book that I had written called The Business Romantic. The subtitle was Give Everything, Quantify Nothing, and Create Something Greater Than Yourself. So it was a manifesto against an obsession with datafication and efficiency and optimization. And in the book, I was exploring the tropes of romanticism from the arts and literature philosophy movement of the 18th, 19th century, to be precise, and how that might apply to a new age of disenchantment that I witnessed in light of this regime of Silicon Valley thinking, in a way, that engineering can save the world, that there is an engineering solution to every single problem on Earth, no matter how small, no matter how big. And that kind of irked me, and I found inspiration in the ideas of romanticism and applying them to business. So that was the premise of the book, and the book resonated, at least with some people. And in the closing chapter of the book, I put a kind of tongue-in-cheek invitation, and I said, I founded a secret society, which is a very romantic device. And I said, if you want to be part of the business romantic society, this very secret society, then please shoot me an email. And it was meant as a joke, but then some people actually emailed me and inquired about it and said, hey, how can I become a member of the business romantic society? And so at some point I felt like, oh, I need to do something. I need to gather people. So that was the spark for the first gathering. I reached out to my former colleague and friend Till and said, why don't we do as a passion project, why don't we do this event, which took place in an old guild house in the Barrio Gótico in the old town of Barcelona. And it was piggybacking on a big trade show that happened at the same time, Mobile World Congress, a big telecommunications industry show. And we were very much the antidote. We were very much like the nemesis, like the thorn in their side, like the very beautiful, whimsical tender, soft, artsy event that took place on the other side of town. And that's ever since has been our role. And after the event, and it was free, we invited some friends, and we realized quickly that we had struck a chord and that people wanted this. They wanted to meet in a more meaningful way without business cards, without name tags. We don't have badges. Really meeting people as humans, even though there was a business context. And we did a silent dinner. We had an opera singer. We did an exhibition. We talked about football and what business leaders can learn from football, the beautiful game. So we had all kinds of like fringe topics. And it was really cool. And we, after that, we sat together, Till and I, and said, let's just do this for a living. This is great. We're onto something. And people like it. And maybe, I don't know, it sounds kind of grandiose, but maybe the world needs it, or it needs this form of gathering. And then the House of Beautiful Business was born. And it then evolved into a growing global community. We moved to Lisbon, did an annual gathering there, did a number of smaller gatherings throughout the world, established local chapters across the globe. And yeah, and now this global community of more than 30,000 people, if you will, and maybe more on social media, who share the same mission of making business more beautiful by drawing from the arts and the humanities, by adding a quality that it's kind of hard to describe, that is very playful, imaginative, and a vocabulary that usually you can't find in business. And the time has come for that. And I think that's why we're seeing so much interest in the house and so much resonance.
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell for myself, but it seems more relevant than ever with our addiction to being productive and being constantly busy and always feeling guilty for not doing more. And we don't have to do more. It's not about that. It's about really enjoying the way and about not stop being yourself while you're at work and accepting, embracing your whole self as a human being. And I would love to dive deeper into that. So what does it mean to be a business romantic? Like, how does it look differently in the day-to-day life from any other business?
A business romantic fundamentally believes that there's more to it than the eye can see and that our empirical instruments can measure. So in that sense, it's really a revolt against some of the conventions of modern management. Management is essentially an attempt to use science mostly and quantitative tools to contain, measure, and manage reality. It's this illusion of control, which we, at the end of the day, don't really have, because it's life, and life is wild, and we don't have control. And the romantic, at least, intuits that there is a mystical sphere, there is something in nature, there is something in relationships, there's something in a spiritual sphere that we cannot quite grasp, at least not with the narrow instruments of management. So the romantic in business, it's sort of like a contradiction, right? Mm-hmm. In adjecto. I mean, it's like, by design, it's actually not possible to be a romantic in business, except if you have the courage to defy the data sometimes and say, no, I'm not, I know the data, but I will follow my heart. I will follow my intuition, or to make decisions that are in tune with a sphere that you can't quite explain, and to resist this temptation to label everything and categorize it and extract it and exploit it, to sometimes maybe leave things sacred rather than desegregating.
That sounds about right.
And secularizing them, but actually really honoring their sanctity and the mystery of things. But that's very much like opposed to the way we run business. But I do believe if we want to shift towards an economy that is more inclusive or more honoring of all life inside us and around us, like a life-centered economy, then the romantic is the key figure, because the romantic sees more and appreciates more and can also ascribe value to things that are not necessarily quantifiable. And I think that's important, because we've seen that business as usual in modern management has failed us. It has produced so many externalities. Mental health, climate crisis, this myopic belief that productivity and efficiency are sort of these, false, these gods, right, that we have to revere. And I think we got to break away from that. And the romantic is this rebellious persona. And that gives us a license to do that. So I like the sound of it, I think. And people actually, when I ask people, are you romantic? I always ask at the beginning of my talks or so, or conversations, I said, how many would consider yourself or describe yourself as romantic? I mean, a lot of hands go up. Like, people actually want to be romantic, right? That's how they want to live their lives. Not just in terms of romantic relationships, but in the way of experiencing life. They're looking for romantic experiences. And then why not find them in business? Why do we exclude that side of our being from business? It doesn't make any sense. So I think we got to stretch it and expand the playing field. And the romantic is a powerful tool here.
It does sound like it. Let's talk about a specific example. Mm-hmm. Do you have something in mind?
A specific example of a business romantic or like a person?
Yeah, like
or
how
a
would a day in a romantic business look like, different from just say any other business?
Yeah. Well, I think there's, for one, I think there's probably far less routine. Mm. So I think there's constant shape shifting. It can be as banal as like changing the workplace arrangements, like never going into the office and anything, like everything is the same, right? We're not the same person, the same people every day. So there is also this obsession with consistency. Why do we have this obsession? Why don't we create workplaces that have the courage to be inconsistent, as in changing workplace structures, you know, flexible desking, but also I think changing roles and identities. I think it's nice to be in a workplace that allows us to be different people. Mm-hmm. It can be, and this is what some organizations do, it can be that we change roles and assume roles of others that might be too big, too junior, too senior for us, that we stretch. And I think other devices are, you know, creating experiences and practices that basically creates space for something that is not empirical. So for example, we've run a lot of silent dinners. This is something that we birthed mm-hmm. at the first house event in Barcelona, as I mentioned earlier. And it's very powerful to do, to actually sit in silence and break bread with business leaders or with colleagues. We do walks. We work with dancers and performers and artists and bring them into the workplace. We help companies with the House of Beautiful Business stage retreats. Mm-hmm. So create alternative realities, if you will, that are then inspiring them to go back and say, maybe we adjust like the everyday reality a little bit, inspired by this parallel world that we just saw that the House of Beautiful Business brought to us, because so much more is possible. But I think a business romantic workplace is also one that honors emotional diversity. So the full range of our emotions. And I think there's been this obsession with positive emotions in business. So it's essentially optimism, happiness, joy. That's also what Silicon Valley has taught us, right? Like, you got to be happy. It's a campus. You know, we're all in this together. It's almost like a student's life. But that's also a false, I think, analogy. Like, especially a student is actually going through a lot of struggles, finding themselves and going through profound period of transformation. And I think it's very important that workplaces honor the full range of our emotions, complicated emotions. There's this really beautiful book, I don't know if you know it, The Dictionary of Obscure Sorrows, that's capturing emotions that actually don't have any name, or they have only a name in certain cultures and tribes. Schadenfreude is a very German expression for the joy of seeing damage done to others, right? Like something like that. And it's a collection of these emotions indicating that our emotions are so much richer than business would want us to believe, and especially the complicated emotions. So sorrow, melancholy, saudade, as the Portuguese call it, like this beautiful feeling of suffering from the world, and melancholy, sadness. And the, you know, a really human workplace is not one that makes us happy all the time. It's one that allows us to be sad. And we've seen a new breed of leaders creating spaces like that. So business romantics know that, and they hold a space also for sadness, and they accept colleagues and members of teams who are not happy and productive and optimistic every day, but are broken, have cracks, are complicated, are fragile. That's, I think, a romantic view on individuals, on people, and that's a romantic concept of business.
No, the productive question that comes to mind is, how is it benefiting the business? Again, being productive, but it is, because businesses have a goal. And when businesses allow people to be their full self, what does it create? How does it ripple?
So there's various ways of, I get this question a lot, there's various ways to answer that question. So the first one, the very pragmatic one, would be to say, yeah, it does pay business dividends. There is a return on investments if you invest in these types of practices and cultures. Very simply speaking, there's tons of research out there that prove a positive correlation between psychological safety. Psychological safety comes from the permission to be your true self or to be many selves and to be sad and to feel protected even if you have a bad day or you fail or you make a mistake. So it allows you to be who you really are and explore and transform and grow without being penalized for it. And there's other components of psychological safety. But I think if you create a culture that is at the core inclusive and honors a broader range of emotions and more of our humanity, then there is a higher degree of psychological safety that will convert into higher productivity and especially higher creativity and innovation. There's a real, like, a lot of research proves that. Also, we know that workplaces with a very strong sense of purpose also perform better compared to others. And purpose also comes from a shared mission that aligns with your values and your passion. It's a mission that you can passionately support. And that is, I think, also a hallmark of a successful company. So that's one way of answering the question. Is that, yes, there's research that shows that exactly those practices, business romantic practices, the idea of beautiful business does translate into quote unquote better business results. But that's just half of the story. I think the bigger picture here is that maybe we should just shy away from these very narrow metrics and not always look at productivity or creativity or growth as the only metric, and not only look at businesses in the context of growth and bottom line and profit, because businesses have that's a very narrow way of course accounting for the value that dismisses the externalities. It looks at a very narrow slice of what business produces and its impact on the world. Now we have ESG and other metrics, of course, to counter that. But I think the bigger picture is that businesses and companies are really makers of meaning, and they are a social enterprise, and they're actually one of the few remaining institutions, because churches have, you know, been secularized in the Western world. Families have eroded, have become less coherent and strong in society. So the strongest social institution, arguably, that we have, where you meet like-minded, but particularly also not like-minded people, the others, is business. And so it's a big meaning maker. And that value is not captured necessarily in quantitative terms, right? That's not looked at. So we only look at growth, profitability, and so forth, shareholder value. But there is, of course, the environmental footprint. There's this societal footprint. But there's also the role of business as an organization that creates meaning. It's very hard to quantify. But it inspires people. It gives them a sense of belonging. It gives them a home. And that cannot be, especially in an age where we are facing a loneliness epidemic, that's not a quality that can be, you know, that we can't underestimate, I think, or rate high enough. That's I think that's really important.
Yeah, it does. I couldn't agree more. It reminds me a little bit of that thing where people do meditation in order to be happier. But actually, if you expect anything from the practice of meditation, you're doing it wrong. It's just about being and about having, for maybe 5 minutes or 10 minutes a day, our focus inwards and not only outwards.
Yeah.
And to be able to sit with whatever comes up and just be there. And that's it. And maybe with businesses, that's a little bit similar. It's not about expecting the best results all the time. It's just allowing many things to happen there. And that sense of belonging is just one of the few things that we miss globally. Like, people are very, I am myself having this question, like, where do I belong? I'm always seeking my tribe, and being at the Dream this year was incredible. I feel so grateful to be able to meet so many incredible people, creative thinkers, and people who are basically having more questions than answers. And I feel this is a key. And so most of them found the event through the book. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. Maybe in the beginning, the book was important. There was the initial draw, or people heard about this idea through the book and speaking engagements. Now, because the book came out in 2015, so 7 years later, the house has established itself as a brand. There's a community. There's a lot of word of mouth referrals, and There's a certain mystique. People see also photos from our events. And and we just had this, as you said, the festival in Sintra, Portugal, called The Underline or The Dream. And looking at the photos from the event, and one of our attendees or one of our speakers even wrote an article about it, it's so evident that people are so, like, they're so happy. And you see a lot of people hugging each other. Now, this is not like a, you know, this is not like a hippie commune by any means. There is a lot of business there, and there's a lot of corporate managers and investors there. There's also artists and scientists, and really it's a very eclectic mix. But I think if you look at the faces of people who spend 3-4 days together learning about new ideas, going through some experiences together, trying to push the boundaries of what is possible in business, you see the glow. You see the glow in their face. And then when you talk to people afterwards, they often tell us that they come back to their workplace and they're almost like, you know, they're feeling like they're almost like depressed, right? They experience this high of what's possible, and their spirits has been lifted. And then they come back and they realize, oh, this is going to be an uphill battle. This is not the reality that I'm in. And then often the question we get is like, what are we going to do? Like, how do I bring this back? And how do I navigate this rift between, oh, this amazing world that I just experienced, and then the reality of my business? And the truth, of course, is like, it is a journey, right? So we have the luxury through our experiences and events to create something. It's like a movie. It's like a theater show. It's like art, right? So we can create this alternative world. We have no constraints in a sense, and we can create a very, very inspiring, imaginative place, like a promised land that you are part of. And our hope is that that's so compelling that as you go back and you have influence, and everybody has some influence, more or less formalized, senior, less senior, to bring that in, even in the most modest ways. And if a lot of people do that, then yeah, I do believe there is change. There is a groundswell, and there will be, step by step, there will be, and this, we'll see this happening. There is change, yeah, possible.
So I want to quote you on something. In one place you say, not just why we gather, but also how matters a great deal to us. What is the different how? I want to go one step back before people go back in their default world. What is the how that people feel so excited by in the events that you're hosting?
The word that comes to mind is intimacy. I think people are craving intimacy. So not, they want to be part of a collective, and they enjoy the collective effervescence of being thousands of people at rock concerts or Burning Man, and in our case, 600 people or so. But I think what makes it distinctive and what they really want is the intimacy. And the intimacy with a crowd or with another person, and the intimacy of going through an experience together and actually really being authentic. So what we often hear from people is that they say, oh, I didn't have to make an effort. Like I wasn't trying to blend in or to fit in. Someone, Ebru Kirksal, she's actually a member, a former CEO, investor, member of our community. She once wrote a really beautiful piece about the difference between belonging and fitting in. And she said, all my life, and many of us, for many of us, that's probably true, we are trying to fit in. So we're trying to fit into a system so we can deliver value and we feel like, oh, we're respected, we're seen. But that's never a place that makes you truly happy, a place where you fit in or you force yourself to fit in. The place where you belong is actually a place that accepts that you don't necessarily fit in. And the house is like that. Hope in the best case, let's say that's at least our ambition, that people say, you know, everybody can be what they want, and they're very welcome. It's very warm. It's very kind. That's very important to us. And there's an experience that lifts their spirit that's different, but it gives people a sense of belonging. It's, oh, this is how I can be the person who I really am, and I'm still welcomed. You know, I don't need to fit in, and I don't need to pretend, and I don't need to talk the usual talk. I don't need to play the game, you know, like at many other business conferences. Here, it's really about the human-to-human connection. That's how we design experiences as well. For example, Priya Parker, from whom we learned a great deal, you know, who wrote this beautiful book, The Art of Gathering, she opened our festival, I think it was in 2018, and it was kind of like the quintessential opening in a way, because she had everybody stand and then basically called people, asked people questions, and actually made everybody see each other and said, so how many of you came from like 1,000 miles away? How many of you needed permission from someone else, spouse, partner, child, friend, colleague, to come? How many of you, you know, so she asked a lot of questions. People stepped forward and the questions got more and more personal. And what happened was, doing that exercise, that people saw each other. Mm. And just by doing so, there was a sense of community, or a sense of like, this is why we're here. You know, and so this is something we try to do, that we really want people to see each other. And at the same time, we also believe in stagecraft, right? So it's also entertainment and it's also theater. And we also want to really blow people's minds and kind of overwhelm them. Yeah. Mm. But we want to do that at the same time, like combining that with very raw and honest connection. And I think both is possible. So we have the stage and we have the show character of it, but we also have a lot of space for very, very intimate, honest conversations that people remember far beyond the event, hopefully.
Well, I can only say for myself that it does exist, and the people that I met at the house and the kind of conversation we had and still having. Just today I had a call with someone I met at the house. It just opened up something, that shared experience. It gives that common grounds that is completely different from just meeting someone and scanning the barcode on their badge and just being like, oh, you know, maybe we have some business to do together. It's a completely different level of meeting human beings. And then whatever will happen next, it could be nice, but it's not a must. It's not what this is about. And it also feels that people come to the house without this pressure or agenda, you know, to make business, like to make connections. They come to meet other people. That at least was my experience.
That's totally true. I think it's also because many people come to us don't necessarily are sent by their companies. They mm-hmm. often represent companies, but they either pay for it themselves because they're at an inflection point in their life and they want the change. And so it's interesting, you know, that and that's maybe probably why they really show up as the real people they are, and it gives everything a different vibe. But we also have, it's not just this annual festa, right? So we also have a lot of online programs, and they're actually, funny enough, often, I mean, I wouldn't say they're more intimate, but they also have an equal sense of intimacy, even though it's Zoom. And I remember that in 2020 during COVID, we did our festival entirely online with some small local activations, and it was called The Great Wave. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, it was a coincidence that we had named it that in a weird, clairvoyant anticipation of the COVID pandemic. But people really stayed on for hours, and actually people told me that they made friends. You know, they're still in mm-hmm. touch with people they met in some Zoom room, breakout room during the Great Wave. So there was a great sense of intimacy, and I think that's something also that we're really that we're really conscious of. Yes, that we appreciate meeting in person. That's very important, like the presence and the physicality of it and the sensuousness of it. But there is an intimacy also that's online, that we play with. And then there's all these local events as well. So more and more, the house has become a movement, or movement is such a big word, but a community that really connects, and that to a large degree is actually very self-organized. So it's not us organizing it or orchestrating it. People find themselves, we don't even have an app. We don't have a network, like an online network. People find each other through WhatsApp groups. I mean, if they really want to connect, that's mm-hmm. my belief, people connect. There's plenty of tools around. We don't have to own it all.
Yeah, but you do have to create like the canvas to allow them to connect. Because, okay, so in this show, I'm hosting many people who are creating community-driven projects like co-living and co-working. And often the struggle is to allow people to take initiative and to feel like they can start an event or host a dinner without having a facilitator who is in charge, a community manager, to keep it going, to make sure that everyone feels welcome and all that. So let's say if you met someone who is about to start this kind of project, what would be your advice to them?
Do not hire a community manager.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's...
I say this because we've tried. We had this role as well. And it's a little bit like with romance or happiness. The moment you formalize it and you suddenly have community goals and metrics and you have a role dedicated to it, it almost takes the magic out of it. And so maybe I say this also being very jaded, because we were very lucky. We have this community that's grown organically, and of course with a lot of shepherding from our it's not that it suddenly magically evolved, right? We also steered it. And but the community manager role, we would not hire that. We don't have that role anymore. But that being said, we had a very, very powerful people on our team, like Monica Jiang, who just embodied the spirit of the community so much. She was never a community manager in a traditional sense, but people looked up to her, and she answered every single email that came her way, you know, no matter how small the question or the task, and what, no matter when it came. I mean, and the reason is she really, really genuinely cared. You know, she really genuinely cared, and that no role will impose that on you. Or this is just like it's just how, like, someone who really cares and who lives the house and this idea. And I think that those are the people we need on our team, but we also need these people, of course, in the community. And though it's kind of like a love fest, right? So there is a mutual love there and a real appreciation, and that, I think, and a lot of trust. A lot of trust that you can say critical things, you can make mistakes, you know, you it's fine if you don't come 1 year to the festival, or, you know. And so I think there's a lot of trust there, and a lot of, hopefully, a lot of kindness that's very real. And I think that has really helped. What else would I advise people who grow community? I think communities go through this interesting process. There's this theory, and I forgot who actually coined the term or observed this. Let me think. I forgot it. I can't come up with the name right now. But the idea is basically that communities start as pseudo communities. They're kind of fake communities. Mm-hmm. So you call people into an event, you describe a cause that everybody rallies around, and shared values, and that's why people come. But that's very intellectual, right? And it's kind of like this buy-in and this wanting to buy into a shared cause, but it's not necessarily a true community. But then, after the first crisis, or it really goes through a challenge, and we had this with our community, ups and downs, you know, challenges, projects.
That's my next question. We can talk about it in a minute.
Okay.
Yeah.
and sorry for my long-winded answers. But,
no.
But then it becomes a real community at some point, right? And it actually grows roots and branches. It has a real body. It becomes a real being. And that has happened, I think, maybe over the past couple of years. I think COVID was really important, because we had a lot of online sessions, and it was a moment when people were very vulnerable and very open to gathering. And I think that really brought people together and helped us grow our audience. But then also, I think with The Dream just now a few weeks ago, we really realized, like, wow, this community is alive. People now know each other. There's new people that are welcomed in. It's not just sort of a claim. It's actually, and we're almost like we're in awe, but we're also shocked, because we also know we have no control over it, right? This is like this self-organized organism. And that's, I mean, it's pretty awesome. But I think knowing that, that's also, I think, something really important. So you need a very strong purpose statement. You need a really strong why that's very distinctive. Like, why should people come and be part of this community? Why not another community? So it's an identity question. But then also trusting the people who are there to take it places and shape it with their own ideas, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the magic happens, when people are not only passive, consuming whatever experiences, talks, and content you deliver, they're becoming active in creating events, dinners, inviting other people to come. What do you think make people switch between those roles?
It's a really good question. Like, I think it's that's a very good question. I believe they need to be truly, truly moved. So I don't think they do that just because intellectually they're convinced of an idea or something rationally spoke to them, where they say, oh, this is a fascinating new management theory that I need to bring to my colleagues. No, they need to really be profoundly touched. Something needs to really go under their skin. And then they're like, they feel this urge to do something with it, to paint, write, record a song, like host an event, like create something. It's this idea of, I think, prolonged, like to do something creative to prolong the spirit of the house. And I think the second thing is they need to feel empowered. And they mm-hmm. to do so, I think they need to have role models. So they need to see people in the community who have done that, mm-hmm. who have stepped forward and had the mandate and the permission to create something and have done it and were recognized for it, so that they can then say, okay, I can do this too. You know, they've showed me how. And yeah, it's welcome. So why not?
Yeah, there's a lot of energy building up towards the event. And at the end of it, you just feel so much potential and you feel so connected to everyone else. And it's almost like, okay, what do I do with it now? How do I keep this alive in my daily life, in my routines, wherever I go home or not? How do I keep in touch with this spirit of feeling alive? And I would love to hear from you, what makes you feel alive?
Falling in love.
Oh.
I mean, that's, and I think that's that, and there's so many ways to fall in love. And but I think people who, this is also what people experience when they join the community. There's just this feeling of like, and this is true for any really powerful experience, you are inspired. When the inspiration means you fall in love with an idea or a certain experience, and then you want to, then you think about like, how can I sustain it? I mean, the natural instinct is, how can I do this again, right? So it's the first mm-hmm. thought is like, okay, how can I replicate this? I had an amazing experience, amazing evening, amazing conference. Like, I want to experience it again. It's very human. And of course, it's not possible, right? The moment is gone. It will never be like that again. But I think there are ways to then be creative and sustain the love in a way or express it. And I think that's what people want. I talk about other people. But that's what makes me feel alive. I feel alive when I fall in love, but I also feel alive when I feel very much alive when I feel like an idea is true and it is, yeah, its time has come. You know, there's like these moments when you realize, oh yeah, this is, I'm seeing something and other people should see it too. And there's some meaning that I uncovered. That makes me also really alive. Yeah, and I think the thing that really makes us alive, I think all of us are, I shouldn't say all of us, I'm generalizing it, but makes me alive is the opposite of feeling dead. Maybe that's how I can best define it. And I feel very dead or agonizing if I'm not seen. Like if I'm stuck in a meeting where I don't have anything to add or I don't have a role to play, or I'm just put in a, there's a perception of me that is just not who I am and I can't get out of it. I feel oppressed. Mm. I think that is like a small death, right? And there's so many of them at work, because we're often so put in these boxes and we die a little bit and die again and die a little bit again. And feeling alive means like breaking out, breaking away from these scripts, breaking away from these protocols, breaking away from conventions, breaking out of these cages and revolting, right? That's a moment when we have an opportunity to get back in tune with the wilderness of life. Right, the chaos and the anarchy of it and this beautiful mess that it is. I think that's what makes us feel alive, right?
Yeah, it is. You're describing it in such a beautiful way. I feel like I experienced it myself, and it seems like you have too. It's the transition from just being in your head or being in whatever role you were externally told you should be doing and acting from your body or acting from your senses and feeling, experience the world through our senses. And I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but during the dream, during the event, there was a lot of activation of the senses, starting from the location itself, like the Quinta da Bela Vista. Which was amazing. Just walking there, I wish I had a video of the people's faces when they walked in the path and just saw for the first time the view. It's just like, they completely lit up. And by, you know, having talks up under the trees, and then the whole, there was a tactile element to the event. And I don't know if you did that on purpose. Was it on purpose?
Yeah. I mean, maybe not all of it. I think also a lot of things happen that are not planned, but our intention at least is to activate the senses and design these experiences accordingly.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it stays.
That's where, it's
embodied.
Yeah, then, it's so true. Mm-hmm. And the moments when I feel alive, I'm just thinking also about, like, actually one of my favorite moments around the dream was the week leading up to the dream. because I was very busy doing the program, I very much enjoyed it. But actually, I really remember very fondly the week leading up to the dream. When we sat in Lisbon, we had rented a small room in a palacio in a hotel. And first there were three of us, and then five of us, and the team grew. Every day, more people came in from all over the world, and then suddenly we were 15, 20 people. The volunteers came. But we sat there from 8 to midnight or longer every day, like just at this desk. And there was such a beautiful flow, especially because we don't see each other very often, team members. So we were suddenly there with our bodies, and we could feel how we suddenly, our bodies connected, and there was a flow and presence. And these are moments when I at least stop thinking about like how I'm being perceived and what I say. I just say it. So it's there's this, it just kind of bursts out. It's almost like I'm there, but it's not my brain, you know. It's just like something is just happening between us. And I think that was really cool. That it's a beautiful, that's a wonderful team, and that was one of my fondest, that I felt very alive in that week.
That sounds amazing. Have you ever did anything completely irrational that turned out for the best?
For the best?
Yeah. Well, breaking scripts.
Oof. Too many. I mean, this sounds sort of pretentious. Whenever I did something irrational and broke the script, I also paid for it, I think.
Always comes with a cost.
Yeah, these were breakups, or they were weird, erratic moves that surprised others in my lives, and often also people who were very close to me, and then surprised myself. And I think they came at a cost, and also harm inflicted on others. So I'm very rational, actually. I'm not very rational. I do things out of impulses often, and often I regret it, you know. So I wouldn't say that's like a bad, sort of a path to happiness necessarily. But that being said, maybe irrational is not the right word, but I think our concept of rationality is so narrow, it's so Western, it's so logical, it's so brain intelligence based. And we often know things, you know, with our bodies and with our intuition, and we know what the right decision is. And it's good, I think, to sometimes trust our gut, or maybe always trust our gut and how our nose and our ears and our senses and not just like the, you know, not just the intellect or this concept of the rational mind. Yeah. And I mean, in a way, even like, with the house, the strategic decisions we make, like, or picking up a theme for the next festival, or knowing where to go next. And we have, on the one hand, a very rational mind, and we do our research, and we operate like very much like still a very conventional business, crunching the numbers and, you know, looking at each side of the equation and so forth. But ultimately, I think both Till and I and the team, we also make a lot of decisions with our guts. You know, with our hearts, really. And that has mostly, I say, not always, but most often it has been good. Or at least it felt good. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why it was good.
Yeah, that makes sense. Oh, I can't believe we're coming to an end. This went by so quickly. Ah, and I still have that one last question to ask you. But first, where is the best place to connect with you, follow your work in the house?
Yeah, so you go to www.houseofbeautifulbusiness.com. And of course, you can follow us on social media. Instagram and LinkedIn in particular are good. You can find me on LinkedIn, reach out anytime, send me a direct message. Instagram, LinkedIn are good. Yeah, love to hear from you. And please, yeah, do join us. We sometimes offer, we run open houses online, like once a quarter. Mm-hmm. And they're great opportunities. They're free. You can join. Sometimes there are hundreds of people there. We have speakers. Join, you know, that's a good way of getting to know, getting a sense of getting a flavor of the house.
Sounds great. I'll also add the newsletter of the house.
Beauty Shot. Yeah. Bi-weekly newsletter. Exactly. Oh, subscribe to that.
Good.
Thank you.
And I'll put all the links in the show notes, so it will be easy for people to find. So before we go, there's one last question that I ask all my guests, and it's called the wild napkin. So you're going to a bar, and you have a couple of drinks, and your mind is really free. And all of a sudden, you have the craziest idea. But all you have is a napkin, so you write it down. The next day, you find it in your pocket. What does it say?
Depends on how many drinks I will have had.
Enough. Enough drinks.
I'm not trying to evade your questions. I'm trying to buy a little bit more time saying that I don't like back of a napkin. I never do that, ever. I would never draw on a napkin.
Never?
Never.
Never say never.
Or maybe I did. And I usually also don't even sketch things out. Like if it's a really idea that is strong or so, it's just in my mind. So anyway, but God, well, I don't want to evade or try to run away from the question. What would that be?
So there is no... Mm-hmm. Budget limit,
yeah.
No time limit.
Mm-hmm.
Really anything that is like wild and just came to mind.
Oh, I would. With the house, I have two things that come to mind. So one is professional, one is personal. Mm. So the professional one with the House of Beautiful Business would be, I would love for the House of Beautiful Business to have a number of actual houses all over the world, you know, like, guest houses, small guest houses designed by amazing architects like yourself that are retreats that are big or small, that are in very meaningful locations. And then that's one dream for the House of Beautiful Business. Another one is, I think, and this is one that Till and I dreamed together because we both played in bands. I was more in a chanson band. He was more in a punk band. But we would love to do the world tour of the House of Beautiful Business with t-shirts that state Madison Square Garden, you know, like touring the world where we put on a show and bring beautiful business to the masses, and it's rock and roll and it's fireworks and it's like Cirque du Soleil meets Metallica meets, you know, FC Barcelona. I would love that. We would love to do that and work with a high end, like the best designers, producers, artists in the world. Like that would be really amazing. I think business, there's something there, you know. Anyway, personally, I would live. It's funny because a friend of mine recently told me that she sees me living by a lake as I get older. Mm. I don't see a lake. I really want to live by the ocean. I would love to have a house by the sea, preferably the Mediterranean. And I know what that house looks like. And I would want to play. I want to make music again. And I just want to write and host small House of Beautiful Business gatherings there. But that's really, that would be amazing.
Great answers.
It's possible. It's not completely outlandish, I guess.
Of course. Well, it all starts with seeing it. Then the way to execution is some unfolding. I want to thank you for being my guest and coming here
thank
today.
Thank you, Adi, for having me.
And thanks everyone who joined us today. And until the next time, go out and talk to strangers. Bye-bye.